Welcome to The Road Show.
In South Africa.
It brings people together, it breaks down barriers.
Winning to be the best. To be the best is something we strive for.
There's a crucial role in South Africa.
Compassion.
Great. Passion. Fiction.
Gold.
Ultimate goal.
Glory. Relentless training. Pain.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another awesome episode of The Road Show. And I am so excited to get into the nitty-gritty from today. I've been saying to everyone, you know, in the Patreon group and whatnot, 2024, what a year to be alive. Lawrence is back with us again for the Regatta Madness. Lawrence, how are you doing? What did you think? What a day of racing to kick off the season.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the best first World Cups of the rowing season or the rowing calendar that we've seen for, I mean, a good number of years. And I mean, I'm coming here a bit hat in hand because I made some bold claims on our hype
bold
train, and none of them panned out. So especially the one that I'm going to have to apologize to the audience for. But no, all good, and yeah, I really enjoy the racing. So cool to see the season get underway, and I really feel like so much more kind of prepped and excited for the Olympics this year because of how much more knowledge we get and how exciting it is to like unpack the knowledge that we gained today and the racing that we watched. Jake, so I thought to kick things off, I thought maybe just a few of like the general kind of things around the regatta that I thought went really well or badly. I think from my side, that venue is incredible. I mean, the weather was unbelievable.
So good.
And like shots of the crews lining up at the start with the like Alps in the background, snow on them, and just this perfect lake was really, really cool.
100%, Lawrence. And I'm glad we're starting there because I do want to say that Varese for me is one of the best places to have a rowing event right now. Every single time I feel that we go to Varese and we have racing, the weather's good, the course is good, the conditions are fast, and you know, it's just an excellent production for spectators and rows alike. And I actually can't believe that the fact that we don't have, you know, any world championship regattas that have happened at Varese yet. You know, I think of Lucerne being such an integral part of the rowing calendar, and you ask yourself, why? Why is Lucerne there every single year? And it's so popular because it's such a good venue. The racing is consistent. Conditions are, you know, consistently fair and fast. The same thing with Varese. And again, like so good across the board, very consistent across the whole weekend. I know there were some problems early in the week and the week before with flooding, and I'm glad they got sorted out. But man, that was such a good start to the racing calendar. What a venue to have it. And it just feels so different to the last two First World Cups that we've had in 23 and 22. You know, not across the board, not just like obviously a big part of that is the fact that we have so much, so many more and more competitive rowers at the event, but also the venue. I just feel like it's such a good venue. Varese is definitely one of my favorite venues, and I'm sad I've only been there once to race, actually. I was also at a First World Cup in 2016. But man, Lawrence, I mean, it just feels different that we've started the season already and it's Olympic year. Like everyone seems so fast. And looking at the prog sheet, Lawrence, you can see that the crews across the board have been, you know, spending the whole cycle getting really fast. I mean, I don't know what you thought about the prog sheet.
Yeah, I thought the standard of the percentages was incredible. So for those of you who are listening or new to our show, then me and Jake do the percentages for the racing. So we go and calculate everyone's time from the A finals. I think this week we did the B finals as well, as a percentage against the world best time, and then publish that so we can compare racing from any boat class and see which boat classes performed the best over the weekend, which one struggled. You can also get a clear picture of how the weather went, because obviously the crews are racing at different times, so you see when the fast times of the day are and when the slow times. And That's all for our Patreon group, which is incredible. That's where all our support comes from. And yeah, we really appreciate what we get from the group, but we also love being part of this rowing community. And, you know, Jake, we have the WhatsApp group. That thing was pumping the whole weekend. Everyone chatting, everyone bringing awesome bits of knowledge and a bit of banter and jokes around the racing. So, yeah, it's awesome to see, awesome to be part of. And, yeah, if you really appreciate rowing and you're watching all the racing come down the track, then being part of our Patreon group is a real bonus, I think.
Definitely, definitely, Lawrence. And, you know, focusing...
Jake, I wanted to take off from where you were saying about Varese as being such a good course.
Yeah.
And I've been on like, you know, I've been thinking about this for a bit, and I think it's almost worth for World Rowing almost to take one or two courses that they like, you know, Lucerne they use every single year and it's like pretty set. And yes, I think it's amazing that, you know, different countries and different places are hosting these regattas and it's moving around and, you know, kind of very inclusive. But there's also something beneficial about having it set at specific places. You know, the infrastructure they can put in there, the kind of the product that they can give to the spectators can be that bit better if they're focusing on one venue rather than trying to set it up like a new business almost every single regatta. I think must be quite taxing. So it's just something that was interesting when you were talking about how good that venue is.
Yeah, and I agree. I think what also adds into the point is how many times in the past have we got to regattas like, you know, World Champs and there's been a debacle around the weather and unfair lanes. I mean, we had it in Serbia. Thankfully, it wasn't as influential as it has been in previous years, but still, you know, the lanes were a big issue in the earlier progression races. In lots of events, and that affects, you know, Olympic qualification. And then you have courses like Varese, which just are unbelievably consistent and really high standard of rowing. And, you know, again, a beautiful venue, a beautiful place to put on an amazing production that lends itself incredibly well to the spectators and to the viewers that are watching the sport. So, yeah, I think, you know, kudos to the production team at Varese, and kudos to the managers of the regatta and the course on making sure it was a, you know, world standard, you know, setting the standard in the rowing world. But Lawrence, I think you know, I really want to get into racing. I mean, it was such a crazy weekend of racing, and I think starting off with the prog sheet, we had the top percentage of the day, and I think this is the first time we've had this event topping the sheet. The women's four, you know, topping the sheet with 98.8% rowing. I think 4 seconds, just over 4 seconds off their world record time. And that's the GB combination, the top GB four, coming away with a big win this weekend and racing against the world champions, Netherlands, who actually came in third and were beaten by the second GB four. So really interesting event this weekend, having both the GB4s coming away with gold and silver. And I think also, you know, there's something to be said about the depth of GB rowing, you know, across the board, men and women, to have, you know, a result like that.
Yeah, I must say the British crew, the whole British team performed seriously well. I mean, we're talking about this just before we got going. Like, we were like, oh, the British performed very well. And they were like, oh, but the Netherlands also performed very well. And, oh, the Italians also had an incredible regatta. But I do believe that. I think that those three countries, Netherlands, GB, and the Italians, had superb results from the weekend. I mean, they won nearly all the medals. They won 12 out of the 14 golds that were available. Germany winning the single, and Ukraine coming away with the last gold medal. So I think between them, absolutely superb. But then also they won a lot of silver medals. So they came away with that, those three countries came away with 9 of the 14 silver medals. So they can go back with, you know, with proud of the golds that they have, but also work to do on all the silver medals that they will all believe that they can turn into gold. And definitely makes it exciting for us because we can see that the leads are going to change hands, I think, a few times throughout the season between those countries and with the countries that we're missing that are going to come back in. But going back to the women's four, I do agree with you, Jake. Like the British, first of all, they looked so good. And the Netherlands, who are usually for me like my textbook sweep crew, the Dutch women's four, usually super long, comfortable, rowing like superbly. I think the British kind of blew them out the water a little bit today with quite a big lead, 5 seconds on them, and with the second GB crew coming away with that second place. I mean, what a result to come top two in the four. But I do think that it hurt them a bit for the eight later, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I thought it was, you know, I was wondering like why the Netherlands would come away with a result like that, because they had a dominant world champ. You know, they won they were world champions, and they beat the British crew by, I think, you know, 2, maybe even 3 seconds. I think it was 2.5 seconds at the end that they won world champs. And for, you know, GB to turn that result around and put in such a commanding result at this first World Cup is, you know, it's really interesting going into the Olympic season, and a huge boost of confidence to the British, and maybe some work to get done for the Netherlands. But I low-key think that perhaps for a crew like the Dutch that have world champions from the year before, getting an early defeat at this point in the season might be a blessing in disguise, and sort of give them a sense of urgency that they might need at the Olympics later on. You know, I think, winning is always good, but, you know, depending on what crew you are and what combination you are, maybe sometimes getting this sort of bit of a chip on your shoulder, a bit of extra energy and a bit of urgency going into an Olympic season after maybe a somewhat disappointing World Cup will do the Dutch and serve them in good stead. But I also think, Lawrence, another talking point in this event and across the board is the tale of two worlds at this regatta, the crews that have qualified for Olympics and the crews that haven't. And there was, you could see it in every event, there was this sort of duality between those two camps. And, you know, the non-Olympic crews I found at this regatta were really quick. And in the women's four, what was interesting was the Irish and the Danish are the two front runners in this event quite clearly. I don't think actually anyone else in this event is going to be able to topple them at late qualifiers. But, you know, the Irish, you know, the women's pair had such a good race in the final. The Irish women's four showed really good ability in the heat, making it with a sprint finish to make it through the heat. And I thought, I was expecting maybe a little bit more from them in the final, but it does seem like the Irish four, who are the Olympic bronze medalists from Tokyo, have found, I think, a bit of form that they had back then, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, 100%. And I love that, you know, the two different races coming down the track, and it's super evident. But it's also like, we're only going to get this regatta and then maybe a little bit at Europeans and then it's final qualification and we into, you know, then it's like really Olympic focused. But yeah, with that late qualification looming, it definitely piques the interest of these early regattas.
And Lawrence,
but the other thing on the, oh yeah, go Jake.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask you a question. Like, do you think there's a difference between the sort of journey of the non-Olympic crews, like having higher peak speed maybe early in the season than the qualified ones because of how of the late qualification regatta? Like, how do you think that fits in with the team? And I wanted to ask, like, how do you think it works if you're managing a crew that needs to go to late qualifiers? You need to be super fast early in the season, but then also, like, how do you manage that crew post qualification in the build up to the Olympics? Let's say, you know, if you make it through and then you have the Olympics on the horizon, like, it's quite a different sort of season to your normal crew that has already qualified. They have a little bit more of a consistent and a bit more of a stable build up to the Olympics. But the non-qualified crews are, it's like you don't know if you're going or not. So you're always on a knife's edge building to this massive event. And then depending on how you do, you might then have to sort of take your game to another level. So I wanted to get your thoughts on, like, how is that working for these crews at a regatta like this?
Like, I think for a coach, I think it should be irrelevant. You should not be thinking 1 millisecond after late qualification. Like, there's no point if you you trying to plan, you know, different kind of training blocks and things, and you're thinking about the games, I mean, late qualification is so brutal, and so many crews go home with nothing from there, that that's got to be the end of your season. You've got to be gearing up to have your absolute best races at late qualification. And if everything goes to plan and you get through, then cool, you've earned your right to race at the Olympic Games. And then you can start to like readjust your next, and it's only 2 months, hey? It's not a long time from late qualification to the Olympic Games. So I would say like more from like a peaking point, like I would say pre-late qualification is like super crucial on, you know, coming into the World Cup as a qualified crew, you might not, you know, back off as much. You might not take be that stressed about, you know, getting the best result if it's going to compromise your training. But at late qualification, you've got to do everything you can to give yourself the best position to perform at that regatta. And then you can deal with those consequences afterwards if you qualify. I think that's a much better way of thinking about it and behaving. And especially if you're in a bigger crew or a bigger country or bigger national team, there's going to be other crews around to help like kind of bring you back on track, get your mind right. And more as the coach, I think for an athlete, it's kind of like a big boost. You know, looking, you got this like big speed hump along the way to the games. You can't see the Olympics over it because you've got to get through it first. And then if you get that right, it's like a kind of springboard into the last 2 months of training. It's like everything is coming right. So, and I mean, we bend it badly in Tokyo, just overdoing it afterwards because you're so excited. You're so kind of, you're so in on those results, and then things don't go the way you want them to go. But I think, the focus has got to be on getting the qualification. You can't worry about anything else. And then, I don't know if you. I mean, I'm sure you agree with me on that one, especially as yourself, you facing that that final qualification regatta in 5 weeks' time.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And it's just, I think it's an interesting dynamic, and maybe one that's not spoken about enough, I think, on the rowing circuit. But yeah, I mean, it was it's definitely going to be talking about some events later on where this this late qualification thing is going to be hell of a interesting. But Lawrence, I think, going back to the prog sheet, kind of starting off with our top five, we have the usual suspects in the second and third position are lightweight events, which are unfortunately soon going to be, you know, cut from the Olympic program. But we have the lighty women coming away with the second fastest prog of the regatta, and by far the most dominant performance. I could not believe how the GB lightweight women's double won that race. It was like they were in a different realm, a different sort of space, and like unbelievable for them setting a standard like that is going into the Olympic season. I think this is going to be a very difficult crew to beat come the Olympic Games.
Well, I mean, is there anyone who can beat them? I mean, the Italians were looking pretty dangerous. And I mean, that's something I would really want to chat about is Italy 1 and 2, massive, massive sprint, every single stroke to the finish line. And taking, I think it's 0.02 between the two of them.
Yeah,
0.02 percent seconds between them. And I mean, for me, do not think that is just between the four athletes, there's got to be a better combination that doesn't finish tie like that.
Yeah,
or do you think that there's just four athletes that are that wanted that badly?
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, it's really interesting. It's a tough spot to be in. I think this is where, you know, this is the situation when you go, okay, let's put these athletes in a quad and, you know, see what happens. But obviously they don't have the luxury of that. You know, this is the brutality of lightweight rowing. There are only two seats available. So yeah, I think this for me is such an inconclusive result, I think, for the Italian lighty double going forward. But I'm glad that this is happening because, you know, the Italians, after such, you know, such impressive performances in Tokyo, haven't maintained that form in these last couple of years. So I think this is perhaps a way of, you know, getting the Italian lightweight double back on, you know, back on the front foot come, you know, the Olympic Games. But yeah, I do agree with you.
It's 7 seconds that they have to make up. So I think
I know.
You obviously don't know what's happening in the team and all the kind of nuances around it. But for me, there's got to be a faster double out of those four athletes if those two combinations finish that close together.
Yeah, I do agree with you. And I think the first combination with Valentina Rodini and Francesca Cesarini, they are the Olympic champions, but they came away with such a close margin to the second Italian boat. I think what they're going to do next is they're going to swap the partners and see if there's a faster combination. Mm. Because, you know, they've Rodini and Cesarini are tried and tested, you know, but I think the other Italian double put on one hell of a performance, finishing, you know, basically tying with the other Italian four, losing by such a close margin. I think, you know, to swap those combinations, I think is going to be the best way to do it. And look, it's not a good margin when you think about the lightweight events on the whole field, not just the Italians. And I think they need to get closer. So I think swapping combinations is what they're going to do going forward.
It's pretty wild though, because that win is the biggest win margin first to second out of the whole regatta. Which is like unheard of in this event. I mean, if you take it back 2-3 years when we were calling this the gladiator event, then it was like roll the dice and do you land on the 0.1% that's going to give you the win. Exactly how the Italians race unfolded was how the whole field was unfolding. So anyway, really, really impressive win from the British. And I wonder if the New Zealanders, they might be able to shake things up a little bit more.
Well, I think Lawrence, actually for me, the Romanian lighty double finished on the podium last year, but I think perhaps the biggest threat that the British are going to face, I think, are going to be from their rivals across the ocean in the United States. I think that's perhaps going to be where the biggest challenge is going to be coming from. But if I'm being completely honest with you and the audience, I think it's their event to lose now, the British. They've set unbelievable markers. They've set the world best time. They are, you know, double world champions. And literally they're carving a path of you know, success after success on their way to Olympic Games. And, you know, for me, it's going to be one hell of a race to topple their supremacy in this event. I think it's literally their race to lose going into the Olympic Games.
And then the another crew that I think can be in the mix, maybe not in the front, but definitely up in the medals, there was the Canadian crew, because they caught that monster, the crab, on the first stroke there. I mean, they lost at least 5 seconds, I would say, coming out the blocks there. And then you rattled, and, you know, that's, I feel like if you make a mistake later in the race, the adrenaline kind of can sometimes kickstart you back up. But on the first stroke, that's the adrenaline, it's kind of already at max for everyone else. So I feel like they literally just lost 5 seconds for nothing.
It is unfortunate.
I don't know if you saw that in the race.
No, I did see that. And they had a good, you know, they came away with the fourth place at World Champs. Yeah, I mean, that was, for me, that was unfortunately a death sentence, because like you said, they literally are 5 seconds down on GB going into the first 500. So, you know, that's a really tough spot to be in going into a race. But yeah, I think they are definitely a crew to watch out for going into Olympic Games. And I think, look, you know, we've seen crazy things happen in Olympic years, and we've already seen at this regatta some crazy results happen. So. Yeah.
On the Canadians there, though, that is like, honestly, my worst nightmare. I think I would have nightmares about something like that happening at the start of a race.
Have you never caught, like, have you had any sort of pressure moments, you know, catching a boat stopper in any race you've done?
No, I don't think so. I'm trying to think if I know like at like local regattas and stuff, we like, you know, if the wind's blowing and stuff, you start a bit skew on the buoys and you got to be like super careful coming out. And I'm sure there've been crabs there, but not, I can't remember like a race that was like defined by, a, you know, a breakage or something happening down the track. I think I've had a rudder break at one of our eights sprint racing, at, for like USA, for like with the varsity sprint races, we had the, and then like the cox had to like steer the boat like a quad would steer, or I don't know, like a double would steer, you know, harder one side or the other side. So that didn't go very well. But yeah, I mean, that's big pressure, coming out the start. And I mean, you're not going to make that time back up.
And then Lawrence, I think, you know, moving on to, the other side of the event, the lightweight men, another interesting weekend, and I think another big performance from two crews that are getting to know each other really, really well. You know, the Italians coming away with a really impressive sprint to capture that gold medal in that event, just pipping the Swiss, and the Swiss, you know, world champs last year, had a really strong race, putting the Irish under a lot of pressure, and just finished ahead of the Italians. But for me, this event, the big talking point for me is actually the Germans. There were two German doubles in the final. The second German boat is actually, from what I understand, a self-supported boat operating outside of the national team structure. And I think they are trying to motivate themselves at being selected to go to late qualifiers and race against the, you know, the other crew, the German one crew, which is the national team boat. And, you know, this weekend they came away with the win. So massive shout out to that second German double, putting themselves in the mix there. And I really hope that they get their shot at late qualifiers after beating the other German double. So yeah, I think that was actually a really impressive performance, and you know, putting it out there on the world rowing circuit at the top stage. So yeah, very interesting talking points in the live men's double.
Not something you want though, as like from the federation side, that's like, that's awful.
I know, that is a nightmare, that's Lawrence. Really what bad. Do you do? I mean, that does make your life really difficult when you but have like things like that.
Those
happen.
People should never be, they, if you have athletes that can come fifth at a World Cup on a world stage, they should not be operating on their own. They're like, they should be part of the team. So like the team is, there's something wrong there that they are operating outside of the team. And I think it's happened a few times in a lot of different countries, but I think it's not a healthy thing to happen. I think it's not good for the team, and it's not good for kind of that nation's rowing, because you don't want that. You want everyone to be in one place doing the same thing on the same mindset.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Lawrence. I agree with you 100%. And I think you also want to set up a structure where it sort of funnels the best athletes into a pool for you to be able to select them from. You know, if you're having a situation where you're having better athletes coming from somewhere else and now making it into the, you know, being the fastest boat, in a way it's like, it's not necessarily, in my head, it's like not a disaster, because now all of a sudden you have this weird situation. For me, it's more about like having all the resources at your disposal, and your athletes are your biggest asset, and, you know, not having them in the sort of run environment to be able to be selecting the fastest boats. And Germany has such a good pedigree in this lightweight men's double. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens and who's going to be in the boat at late qualifiers. But also, actually, Lawrence, I wanted to, you know, that this is a good time to bring up, I think, the Norwegian rowing team, which seems to be on sort of the up. I think the Norwegian lighty double coming away with a bronze medal was really cool to see in this event. They finished sixth last year at World Champs, which I thought was a really good result. And, you know, at this regatta, the lighty men came away with a bronze medal. But also, on the women's side of things, we had the Norwegian women's double putting out a fantastic event. I mean, a fantastic race, picking up a medal, and then also having a Norwegian women's sculler in the final. You know, I can't remember the last time we were talking about especially Norwegian women racing. So it's really cool to see the Norwegian rowing team seems to be sort of on the up with some really, really cool results.
Yeah, I mean, apart from Olof, I don't think there have been, you know, many big, you know, crews coming through there. So yeah, it is really, really cool to see. And hopefully we see that kind of pick up pace. Kind of like the Irish. I mean, the Irish are now a very well-established country. But they, I suppose they perform very similarly though. Norway and Ireland, 2 and 3 medals each. So yeah, very close. So I think if they can keep that kind of those performances coming, then they definitely gonna be in the mix there. The other one that I wanted to say is it's pretty cool to see Stefano Oppo in that gold medal seat, you know, and it'll be cool to see. I mean, it's a good start to the Olympic cycle, and it'll be pretty cool if he got a gold medal at the end of this year.
Yeah, he's definitely. You know, he's been a trooper in that event, you know, a real veteran. And I think that's out of all the events, like that's a really hard event to be sort of such a consistent performer in. It's, you know, it has some real tough racing. So yeah, I agree with you there. It was a really big shout out to the, you know, the Italian lighting men taking away with a big win. But I want to talk about, for me, Lawrence, the number one race of the regatta and number one performance. That is in my very own event, the men's four. Lawrence, the Italians. Italians coming away with a big win, and the GB4 before this regatta was undefeated this cycle. That is in every heat, semi, rep, final that they've raced this cycle. They didn't lose a single race. This regatta, they lost two. Both of them were to this Italian four, which is also not qualified yet for the Olympic Games. So what a performance. And surprise, surprise, it's old Giuseppe Vincino and Matteo Lodo in the boat, joined by Giovanni Abagnali and newcomer Nicholas Kroll from the States. And shit, what a performance, Lawrence. That was incredible to see.
But I mean, these Italians are power. I mean, they're ridiculous. The Giuseppe and Lotto are just unbelievable when it comes to this exact race. Coming into the last 500, you like one length down and taking the win. I mean, they've done it 2017 in the pair against the Sinkoviches. They did it in 2015. I think it's like almost identical to this race with the British when they won in the four in 2015. That's in France at Aigle-Mollet. Like really, really tight. So, you know, these guys are just ridiculous at sprinting. And then, you know, I say Pepe and Lotto are the makers of this thing. But when you watch the race, Nicholas Kroll was unbelievable in the stroke seat there. They're rowing, go watch that last 200 meters again. At like 47. And he's rowing like still a ridiculously good stroke. It's long. He's getting his catch in on time. It's like the technical aspect of their rowing in those last, you know, 100, 200 meters was world class. And I mean, that is, I think, why they were so dangerous. I mean, they just lost contact at the 500 meters to go. And they take a win in a four that's going, you know, I don't know what their last 500 was. I didn't look.
It's 123.
Yeah. So 120, you got 80 seconds. You got to take a length out of someone.
That's unbelievable. What a flipping performance. You know, what a sprint finish.
No. And how cool to watch as well. Like from a spectator point, that's the ultimate. I mean, and anyone listening, if you didn't watch the racing, you don't have to watch, go and watch that one race. Go and even watch the last 700 meters. And Martin Cross is my favorite as well. He's going off already at like 500 meters to go. He's shouting. He's like, no, the Italians can't do it. It comes out of his mouth. He says it. He says it at like 400 meters. It's too far. And then he is going off his head at the end of the race. It's so awesome. I think makes it so much better to watch. So yeah, I thought that race was that was the race to watch for sure.
Yeah, 100%, Lawrence. And I think, you know, anyone, I think the British formers guys speak to the Croatians about being up on the Italians by length, and how you know, mentally challenging that must feel, knowing that this crew can pull something like that out the hat. It's a real, for me, that's a real talent to have that in the back pocket, because I don't think that, Lawrence, that's something for me that's not really trainable. I don't know, like that's something for me, it comes from the athlete. It comes from the combination, the fall. That's an X factor that you can't train. You cannot train that. You can train your physiology, you can train your technique, but to wrap things up together, a length down with 500 meters to go against an unbeaten double world champion crew and pull out a sprint to win. That's not something you train. I think that's something that comes from having incredible athletes.
I would love to see their program, because it's a very Italian thing to do. So, but yes, I mean, I agree with you completely. The other thing I want to chat about is this was in our hype train, we chatted about this being such a big regatta because it had medalists from the year before and it had a lot of crews that weren't qualified. And I think that out of all the races, these are the crews that are yet to qualify in this race performed like crazy. So the Italians, number one, haven't qualified for the four. But then with only one more spot available, the other crews are quite are close there. I mean, you have Germany, Swiss, and Ukraine, fourth, fifth, and sixth, and close behind. And I mean, you know, a lot of other crews going to join this mix. It's going to be incredible.
Yeah, you know, I obviously I'm in the men's four. I'm going to be racing this event at late qualifier, so I don't want to speak too much about the situation. I'm trying to be a real professional podcaster separating the two worlds, you know. But it's really exciting to see, and I think Lawrence, it goes back to that idea that, you know, the late qualifiers and the people that do well at late qualifiers aren't the bottom two of the hierarchy. And the Italians have just showed that, you know, the guys that are going to late qualifiers are at an unbelievable standard. And it's something, again, that makes the regatta so, I think, so tricky to get right, is that you need to be in the mindset of racing Olympic finals if you're going to late qualifiers. So you're not racing another B final against, you know, the bottom crews, in inverted commas there.
Where did Lotto and Pepe, what did they race last year? Did they race?
Yeah, Lotto didn't race. His last race was 2022 in the eight, and then Giuseppe raced, I think, at one of the World Cups in the pair, finishing the B final. So I don't know where they've been. I think they've been injured. You know, I think that both of them struggle a lot with injury, which is unfortunate.
I know Lotto struggles a lot. I think he's had at least one or two back ops and things like that. So I think
they both struggle with injuries, but man, they've been flipping back at it at their best, because yes, this is really a good way to announce themselves back on the world's rowing circuit with a win like that. And again, I like how you're bringing up the stroke man, Nicholas. He's sort of come out American system. He looks like a real, you know, the perfect sort of addition to the crew. Really slick, rowing really well in the stroke seat. And I think if you're rowing in a crew, Lawrence, that's got that experience behind you, you know, it must be quite intimidating rowing with the three guys in that boat who have all been to the Olympics and won medals there. And you have to set the rhythm and the tempo. For a crew like that, it just goes to show that he's such a good rower. Because imagine you have Giuseppe Vincino behind you in the three seat and you in the stroke seat trying to set the rhythm and the tempo. So no, I think Nicholas Cole he's a great addition to that four. And like you said, yes, his rowing in that last 250 meters, going 47 into the abyss was unbelievably good rowing. So yeah, no, that Italian four, I mean, massive crew to watch this year.
And then we were chatting about it earlier. We're saying like maybe the British were rigged too heavy, or you know, they just couldn't step it up. But then when I watched it for the second time, they are at 42, 43. I mean, that's a pretty normal sprint, especially when you've put out a massive middle K that they did. You know, they were very dominant for that second and third 500, you know, putting themselves right there in the mix. And I almost think like maybe they just did not, I mean, you should expect it, but maybe they didn't expect the Italians to come at them quite so ferociously in their last, 200 meters. And then maybe that little bit of panic is setting in because you're just on that back foot when a crew is coming that fast at you. You know, if you don't call it early and you don't take control of the race again, you don't, and they almost get it back. I mean, we're talking like, what is it? It's 0.05 of a second that they lost by. So, for me, this race is definitely not a done and dusted thing for the rest of the season. I still think the British at the moment, I would still put my money on the British.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think that is a good shout, because my first impression after the race was saying that the British four don't have the sprinting capacity. And I think they do. I think it was a little bit of an emotional response to the final. But talking about the Italians, I'm looking at their race data, and per 50, they have race data every 50 meters. Not a single point in the race where they're rating under 40. They hit rhythm at 40. No. And that was
too much, though.
They out the blocks 48 for the first 100 meters. They only settling on, they're still at 42 with 400 meters in the race. And then they're finishing at 46 strokes per minute. So the reality is, Lawrence, that you are dealing.
That's why Pepe is happy to have Nick in the front there, because he's doing what Pepe would do.
Yeah. But I don't know. But I do think there's a little bit of, I think the British four's never been put under that sort of pressure where they've had to pull out that sprint. So I think they're going to learn a lot from that result, and they're going to go back home and be like, we practicing sprinting, boys. But I do think maybe the rig, because you're watching the two crews in the course, and I'm like, the Italians are rowing, have a different philosophy to their rowing stroke versus the British. They were literally two different worlds. You have the Italians, and not saying they're rowing badly, but they are rowing a high tempo stroke, tapping that boat along, very aggressive on the front foot. And you have the British that were long, very composed. I'm not going to say they were rating low, because they weren't. They were at, like, I would say, a conventional rate, like 37, 38, but really long stroke, very composed. And, for me, it was really cool to see, because, again, you have the battle of two worlds, the Italians, and it's something the Romanians do as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens going forward. And I'd love to know if the Italians are going to be racing at Europeans later on. It's going to be exciting.
I agree completely with, like, your analysis of the two different styles. I like the British style more. When I'm watching the rowing, I'm like, when I see the Italians, I'm not like, oh my word, these guys are rowing unbelievably. I would say they were rowing unbelievably at 47 at the end of the race. But like, just the general style and rhythm and feel that the British are putting out is incredible. I mean, if you look at that women's four, just like superb. Technical kind of ability coming down the track. I mean, the stroke goal there, just so super long. Is that Redgrave in the stroke seat?
I need to have a quick look there. But yeah.
But I mean, just that like kind of rhythm that they're setting up, it's so strong, so powerful. And we didn't even mention Helen Glover in the bow seat there. Also just she is a serious athlete to have in your crew, a serious asset. But Jake, I mean, that's a big improvement on the percentages, men's four and women's four. So women's four topping the sheet, but men's four like just outside the top five, coming in at sixth place there, which is like usually those are nearer the bottom of the prog sheet. So interesting to see them starting to come near the top.
Yeah, I think it's Olympic season, Lawrence. These crews are getting fast, and it was a really, really cool race to watch in the men's four. But Lawrence, I think I want to chat about the next big thing, and you have some explaining to do, because the men's pair for me was, if it wasn't for that race in the men's four, would have been the biggest. For me, it was the biggest talking point going to the regatta. You have the Olympic champions. You have the Olympic bronze medalists. You have the world champions, the silver medalists, and bronze medalists from last year. And all those are five different crews racing at this regatta. You could not ask for a better roster of boats going into the regatta. And, you know, beforehand, we had spoken about our predictions. You know, I thought the Croatians were going to be a bit off the pace. You thought the Croatians were going to be on the pace. And lo and behold, men's pair come around. GB coming away for the big win. Swiss, big sprint at the end to get the silver medal. Denmark, a real gutsy performance in that A final, coming away with the bronze. And the Croatians struggling a little bit in this event, coming away with a fourth place. Lawrence, what happened?
Dude, what happened? The Sinkoviches, I always put my money on them. They don't let me down very often, but this cycle, they don't seem to have found their mojo, because they definitely haven't looked comfy in the double last season. And then this season, the crazy switch to the pair, and then still kind of looking a little bit kind of lost in the middle of the field there. Very unlike them. You know, these are guys that we're used to just absolutely dominating and, you know, taking grip of any boat class they get into and ripping it from everyone else. But I think, I don't know, I think maybe the way I speculated was like, cool, they've gone into the pair because they feel like this is a better opportunity for them. Like, they going well, their pair was going well, they Olympic champions in the pair, and now they want to, and they think they can do better in it. But I think maybe watching this regatta, maybe they were struggling in the double, maybe even with an injury or something like that. And we'll have to call them up and ask them what's going on. But maybe they have an injury that's persisting in the double that has like kind of forced their hand into the pair, is the only thing that kind of makes sense to me at this point. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, I agree with you, but I do think that is not the ultimate decision that made them go towards the pair. I think what happened is that after World Champs last year, they thought that they might have a better shot in the pair at making a medal. And I think they, like many people have been doing in the men's pair, they've incorrectly analyzed the data. And often the men's pair falls at the bottom of the prog sheet, and it did at this event. But I think that's not because the crews are not fast. I think that's because it's got the fastest world record and therefore the fastest prog in world rowing. And I'll go out of my shield on that statement there. And I think that means that the event is never going to do well, I think, when you compare it to the world record, because of the you know, the great and powerful Kiwi pair. But yeah, the Croatians, I'm sure, like, again, I was talking earlier about like how good it can be to have a tough result early on in the season to give you some impetus going forward. But, you know, I definitely don't think it's going to be the last that we see of the Croatians. But Lawrence, I don't know, do you think there is a situation where they might go back into the double after something like this? And do they have enough time to find their form? Because, I mean, they were silver medalists from last year. Yes, they want to be closer to the Netherlands, but, you know, they still were in a really good spot, I think, in the men's double last year. So do they have an opportunity to maybe switch disciplines again?
No, you can't. They can't switch again. If they switch again, for me, game over. They're not... Then I think they lost then, I think. Yeah. But I still think they have time. I mean, these are Olympic champions in the pair. It's not like, I agree with you that, I 100% agree with your statement that the percentage for the pair is really, really fast. But it's not that much. I don't think it's like, you know, if we had a like all standard, you know, prognostic or something that we could analyze it all, I don't think it's like way faster than anything else. I mean, the men's four is also ridiculously fast world record. The women's single, ridiculously fast world record. So I don't think that it's like a massive, massive outlier. And I do think that the pair is not like, is still got room for improvement. It's got room for crews to come in and perform at the front of the field. And I just think maybe the Croatians will get there. I think I still back them. I don't know if they could take a win this year and defend the Olympic title, but I definitely think they could be on the podium.
Yeah, no, 100%. I would
definitely back them for coming forward and putting their best foot forward. And, you know, we know that they've struggled with injuries and stuff this year, this cycle. So even now, maybe they've, you know, been kind of dealing with something, or, you know, they're often early in the season not putting their best racing together and then coming with the big guns later on. And we know that they train like ridiculously hard. So maybe they're just under the whip, or, you know, I feel like we need more racing to really analyze this boat class a little bit more, because the British, I think they've won all their World Cups and they haven't won a World Champs yet. So, you know, there's still more that we need to see before we can make, you know, wild statements like I did at the hype train earlier on.
Wild statements, yeah. No, 100%, Lawrence. I think that's really good insight there. And I think, you know, the last thing to chat about, well, actually, maybe not the last thing, but, you know, the Danish pair was, I think, unbelievable, this regatta. I think this is they are showing why they're the bronze medalist. And I think it's a crew that we actually haven't seen much of. Even in the Tokyo year, they were very latecomers to the event. I think only really popping up in the last year. And they've been, you know, they haven't really been a factor in because of, I think, the Sutton's, you know, transatlantic crossing, and, you know, I think that's not conducive to his rowing, but I see he's cut all the bullshit and he's back in the boat. And yeah, a real gutsy performance from them, and I think they're definitely a big wild card going into this year's Olympics. They have to go through the late qualification event, but after this weekend, I think they're going to be a really tough crew to beat at late qualifiers. And then Lawrence, the Irish pair,
what a performance
of world champs. What happened to them?
No, I want to talk back about the Danish crew. They were too fast in the beginning for me. Like, they went out the blocks. They were 2 seconds up on the British after the first 500. It's like they fast. They have speed. They came third in the race. I almost want to, like, they need to calm their start down. They ate too many cookies in the first quarter of the race, and then I think then that hurt them in that second half of the race for sure. When the Swiss were starting to sprint, I think they could have gone more with the Swiss if they had just kind of tempered the start of their race down.
I agree with you, because I don't think they were too far off. The if they tempered their start by 1 second, I think it would have given them huge dividends later on the race, because they actually rode, you know, if I'm looking at the results again, they still rode the second fastest, second 500. It's the third 500 that cost them. They fell off a little bit, rode a high 137.9, where the British are rowing 135s, the Swiss are rowing 136s. And then you're in a position where the third 500, the momentum's turning. Like, that's a hard place to be in when the momentum's turning against you. I think out of all the 500s, you want to be in the momentum in the third 500. So, you know, 100%. if they're rowing 131s in the first 500, cool story. But, you know, you're paying in blood in the later on in the race. And they still got faster than this, the last 500. But then you have the Swiss, who have had a more conservative pattern. And now they have a sprint in their back pocket going into the last 500. And you've literally been chipping away at your physiological limits, rowing 131s at the beginning of the race.
So, like, I'm saying it also a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because me and Sean, we tried our freaking best to even out our race profile. Like, literally, 2016, the whole season was about evening the race profile. And Olympics, first to the 500, fourth to the 1,000. So, my God. There's some things that you cannot change, though. You could race, and, like, when I say that's what we practiced the whole season, was like, cool, make the second 500 faster, make the second 500 faster, and then your default kicks in when the pressure's on, and you blitz the start, and then you may be a bit slow in the middle of the race. So it's, you know, like, I think it's a difficult thing to change, but I do think watching their race that they could have, if they didn't, if they found their rhythm maybe a little bit sooner, they would have had a bit more at the end to play with the Swiss.
Yeah, I agree with you, Lawrence. And like maybe they, you know, maybe they did it deliberately. Maybe they were testing things out at this regatta. But, you know, just seeing that performance, I think was really cool, because I think you do get a sense they were really frustrated with their performance last year at World Champs, coming away with, like, I don't know what happened to them at the end of the race, you know, finishing in last in the B final in such, coming from a strong position. And you think that would have taught them to pace themselves a bit better, but no, they seem to be doubling down on the fast starts. But, you know, it was really cool to see them on the podium, and I really hope they maintain this form going forward, and that they both have a really good late qualification, that we do see them later on in the Olympic Games, because I think the men's pair is turning out to be a flippin' gladiatorial event at the moment. I just think of like how many pair combinations there are in this event where you go, I know that crew you're talking about. Like if I say to you, you know, the men's double, and I say the Dutch men's double, you're immediately associating that, you know, that word, the Dutch men's double, with, you know, Melvin Twello and Stef Bronnick and their whole personality. In the men's pair at the moment, you know, I say the Swiss pair, the GB pair, the Croatian pair, yeah, the Irish pair. There's so many fast pairs that are established and really quick. So for me, this event is becoming the new gladiatorial event in world rowing.
And who's going to late qualification in this event here?
Three big names. The Danish, the Dutch, and the Serbians are going to late qualifiers. Those are three Olympic.
Italy qualified.
Yes, they qualified.
And Ireland are qualified. And they had a mare this regatta.
They had a mare. They bronze medalist last year with such a good performance in that A final, coming away with seventh place here. I think they'll be disappointed with that. But, you know, I think they seem to have a much better performance actually in the B final at this regatta. I watched it. Well, I didn't watch it. I followed it. So I think, we'll see more of them later on.
You might get is even people from the four, especially with Italy taking such a dominant position in the four, you might see one or two of those crews in the four splitting into a single for leg, I mean, into the pairs for leg qualification.
Yeah, dude, who knows? Anything's possible at this stage, Lawrence. You know, it's a really exciting time to be in the world rowing circuit, Lawrence. But I think, you know, another amazing performance at this regatta. Italy weren't the only crew that won an event and they weren't qualified. Another crew that came away with a huge win and hasn't yet qualified for Olympic Games is none other than the Ukrainian women's quad, coming away with a very special gold medal for, you know, the Ukrainians, who are under so much difficulty at this point. And coming away with a performance like that, picking up a win against, Lawrence, the world champions, against the silver medalists. You know, what a performance. You know, I don't know what happened to them last year. They finished one spot off the qualification for their event. But again, you know, where's your headspace at, putting 2 seconds into the Dutch quad and then, you know, another 3 seconds into the GB world champions? So I think a massive shout out to that Ukrainian women's quad that came away with a very big victory in the event.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this is obviously, you know, you have very good athletes under immense pressure from all the drama they have going on at home, but managing to find maybe a safe space to do the training, get the rhythm going and get stuck in. And now you have these good athletes that can perform. So yeah, also very, very interested to see how their season unfolds. I think we are going to be super interesting. Then, Jake, let's go on to the single sculls.
The single sculls, Lawrence. I was just about to say, it's not usual for us to be going so deep into a Regatta Madness episode, and we haven't spoken about one single sculler yet. They're usually forefront, but this time around, they're coming around at the back end of the chat, but nonetheless, Lawrence, I think two, you know, again, dominant performances from the the top scullers in the world at the moment, Carolyn Florin in the women's scull and Ollie Ziedler in the men's scull. I think they just had things went their way this weekend. I don't think they were across from the heat to the final. I didn't get the impression that there was going to be any other result in the A final besides them coming away with the win there.
No way. I mean, look, looking at the percentages, very slow. Very slow time of the day, though. So I would say you got the 2 8s and the two singles coming in close to the bottom. Men's pair and women's double also slow. That's why that's what Jake was saying about the percentages for the men's pair. But yeah, all at the end of the day, all underperforming. So maybe the conditions were getting a little bit slower. But the Ollie in the single, ridiculous, untouchable. I don't think anyone, if he can row those races like that for the rest of the season, I do not believe anyone can beat him.
Mm. No, but the question is like if he rows like that. You know, I think there are some big boogeymen in the men's single at the moment that might come out of nowhere, you know. But, you know, I think, you know, big shout outs here. But before we started the chat, James Britton, our production assistant and newest member of the Row Show, he had raised a really good point. Is like he felt like how would Ntuskos fit into the situation, especially in conditions like that. I think that was a really good point to raise, because we've heard some whispers in the wind that Stefanos has been putting out some really fast times in training. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at Europeans when these crews face down.
100%, dude. I do think Ntuskos is, if someone's going to rattle Ollie, it's going to be Ntuskos, yeah. And especially in like quicker conditions where we know that he's got those cards up his sleeve to pull out the big races. No one else really kind of jumped out the page for me. I thought there would be a bit more big performances. But also, I mean, in the season, it's quite a long season for a single sculler. You know, talk about these eights and things, and, you know, they've got, what do they have? Maybe six, they got like six races left of the season. If you're a single sculler, you've got like, you know, 12 to 20 races left this season. So there's a lot more in the season, a lot more things that can happen and unfold, I think, going forward.
You just saying that, Lawrence, you sent shivers up my spine just talking about how many races the single scholars have left, you know, in the season. And I think, honestly, I thought we were going to see more out of Simon van Dorp in the single scull this weekend, if I'm being completely honest. He had such a good World Champs, I think, last year, finishing, you know, in a very strong, with a very strong race. And I just thought he would put the, you know, Ollie under a little bit more pressure. I think he was like a second and a bit off him at World Champs last year, just over a second. And, you know, this World Cup in Varese, he was, I think, 3 seconds off him. So I thought that we were going to see a little bit more from Simon van Dorp. And I think Ollie, this is exactly the race you would want from someone like Ollie, is like setting the benchmark again, saying like, listen, this is my race to lose. You guys are coming into my world if you want to take away the gold medal. So, but I do agree with you, Lawrence. I just look at Ollie and I think one of these races is going to be a pumping tail. Ollie's going to row a 130 in the men's scull or something crazy, and he's going to break the record. Maybe not 130, but in a disgusting time. I wouldn't be surprised if he rode a 130 in world record conditions and breaks the sculling record again.
And I know that he rode the slowest percentage today, but as I've said, it was a slow time of the day. And also, I don't think he didn't push that hard. Like, okay, everyone's rowing hard and everyone's pushing during the racing, but like, this was far from Ollie's hardest race that he's ever had to put down, and he just crushed it.
Yeah.
I think he was dominant. He didn't like, he's such a, for me, he's like quite a robot, you know. He's going to like pick something that is going to be crucial for that race or that regatta, and he's going to do it. And, you know, this race was I don't think was like, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to end myself this race. It was like, no, I'm going to win this race.
Yeah.
And he just ticked those boxes. So I think he had, I think he might have even had more if Simon had been closer to him.
I agree with you there. I think, you know, he we've spoken to him, you know, on the show, and he sounds like he's very, very tactical about how he, you know, he operates. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was maybe keeping something close to his chest and maybe not showing all his cards in one go. And you never know how things work. Yeah, these single scholars, you never know with them. Hey, Lawrence.
And then jumping across to the women's single, okay, I stand by what I said about the Swiss. Get rid of the Macomb blades and you're in this mix. Watching those the semifinals, she's so dangerous. She's unbelievable for what she's using to the result she is getting is already like ridiculous. If you put anyone else into, you know, back in the ancient times rowing equipment, we're not performing. And if you take one of our boats from now and you go and race it against anyone in the 1992 Olympic Games, I think you're coming away with a win. If you take any of these A finalists.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Lawrence. And I just, like, when I was watching her race, it felt like she was rowing in mud. I mean, to put it plainly, it just seemed like she was struggling to get through the water, if that makes sense. Like, I honestly, you're doing yourself the service rowing in a Swift with, or maybe not, I shouldn't put it out there, so apologies to Swift rowing, but just, you know, not taking every advantage you can get in her position to have better racing. And now it's worked at juniors, it's worked at under-23s, but now she's racing, you know, generational athletes,
Jake,
that are at the peak of their game.
Jake, we've always said it on the row show. We've said it many times, the under-23s is like, freaks can go and win under-23s. Like, I remember back to my under-23 years, those are like the biggest people I've ever seen. It's like people that have come through school and varsity, and like the world is on easy mode for them because they are like enormous and they're just like these physical specimens. But it takes a lot more to take that physical specimen into the senior scene where there's so many physical specimens over all this time, and people have got to come there with real mental fortitude to race and win there. So I think she's an unbelievable athlete. They need to give her the weapons to do the job, and then I think she can be boxing near the front there.
Lawrence, you know, the biggest difference for me is like under-23s is limiting, you know, an age pool. So you have a generation racing at a time. Well, in the open scene, you have athletes from many generations, the best of the best racing. And you have the freaks, but you also have guys that have honed their technical ability over years and years, and in some cases, decades. And, you know, it's just a different level. So to be in a position where you are limiting yourself rowing with antiquated technology is really not helping. And I think it's definitely something I want to see is changing to perhaps more competitive sort of technology and seeing what difference that makes to her boat speed.
And then going back to Caroline, I mean, I'm like ridiculously good, as we've seen throughout the whole Olympic cycle. But I do think that if anyone can win, it's going to be Emma.
Emma Twigg.
Like, I'm not like... I mean, I think it's a big mountain to climb, but I think if someone's going to do it, it's going to be Emma.
Yeah. I think if someone is going to do it, I think it's going to be Emma. But, you know, Caroline has just been so good in the single scull. And again, this is someone that since she's transitioned into the scull, she hasn't lost a single race, from heat, semi, quarters, whatever. She's finished first every single time that she's left the jetty in the single scull. So
yeah, and
having that domination in a, just having that sort of dominating the single skull out of all the events, coming away first places like that, not slipping up once, is still is really impressive. So, you know, I think if there's someone that is going to do it, it's going to be Emma Twigg. But, you know, if I'm going to put myself out there and put out the claim, I don't think she... I think Carolyn is going to win this year's Olympic Games. I don't know if anyone right now is on her level, to be honest.
It's not even that Emma, like, you know, she's reigning Olympic champion and she's coming in with her heaps of experience. But Caroline is not lacking experience. You know, she's silver medalist from Tokyo. She's been there. She's done the yards there, and now, you know, performing consistently in the single. I think she has the full package there at her disposal. It's not like she's, you know, sitting there going, "Ooh, is she going to make it through?" And how is the Olympics going to affect her? And how are the other elements in the kind of story going to unfold? I think she has them all, kind of all her ducks lined up in a row. Yes. Yeah, I agree with you. It will be hard, but if anyone is going to do it, it's going to be Emma.
100% there. 100%. And then, yeah, Lawrence,
I think that wraps it up.
I think that wraps it up. I was just about to say, I don't know if there's any... I think we've gone through the big talking points of the weekend, and it's been a spectacular event. And, you know, just Lawrence, again, I can't believe how different this World Cup is to the one we had last year. It's like completely different. And it's something where I feel like there needs to be certain things implemented that sort of not force, but encourage teams to come to the first World Cup and perform, because this was a really good event that we had this weekend.
100%. And I wanted to add on the viewership. I thought also more views than usual that I usually notice on World Rowing's feed. So literally race one of the day kicking off, and the views were like 2,300 views on the broadcast. And by like the third or fourth race, they were already over 4,000. So then I got sidetracked. I didn't look actually at the end of the regatta when the singles and eights were racing, but I can imagine it was significantly more, which is, quite a bump on what we've seen in the past. I think we touched on the drone footage. For me, the drone footage was out of control. I mean, that is how we want to watch rowing. And on the flip side of that same coin, that is how we get closer racing, because you get the bloody motorboats off the water, no wash, tighter racing, less wasted time between the racing. Like today, I had to miss some of the racing because I was traveling, and you know, I watched the whole stack of morning races, then I watched some of the later races. But like, those should all be close enough together that I can sit and watch all the racing. I'm sorry. I think it's ridiculous that racing spans the whole day.
Yeah, I think so too, Lawrence. It's definitely something to implement, trying to compact the racing tides together and have a more compact package. I think it's just going to lend itself better to the viewership out there. But, you know, I think just before, you know, before we close things off, just a massive shout out to our Patreons out there for supporting the show. You know, we they're the lifeblood of the show for us, and their support means a lot. And then to our viewers out there, you guys also, you know, without you, we wouldn't be able to keep the show going. So, you know, spread the word. If you're interested, go check on the Patreon network. We've been doing some things behind the scenes. You know, our James Britton, the newest member of the team, he's been integral in putting together the fantasy, you know, the fantasy league that we've got.
Yeah, I want to. Going.
So, yeah, we've got
I
the
want
fantasy
to dig in
now.
On the fantasy league. So it was our test run this regatta, and we ran like a very basic entry level kind of setup for our fantasy league, but a lot of wheels in motion on that, and it was so awesome. We had to pick eight. We had to pick an eight. Couldn't pick more than two athletes from the same country, and you had 200 points to spend on eight athletes. And really, really interesting, I must say. I think that was like such a cool dynamic, going through choosing athletes was really tricky. I had to like kind of choose some athletes that were like kind of lesser known in better boats and athletes that you thought you were going to do well, but then they were super expensive. So you had to like go in and actually look, and like I had to apply myself quite a bit to like think of what athletes I wanted to choose to come away with the wins there. So incredible. And I think it'll get more and more polished. We're going to actually have prize money for it by the end of the year. So I think from World Cup 2, we will run like an official kind of fantasy league for the rowing, and people will accumulate points throughout the season with a winner at the end coming away with prize money. And obviously we'll also do our usual kind of little, I want to say betting, but not quite betting at for the Olympic Games. We ran a pool last in Tokyo, and we'll definitely run a pool for this year's Paris Olympic Games, Jake. Sorry, I hijacked you a little bit there.
No, I think you want to add no, there? You did a great job there. I think, you know, we're really trying to try and bring more excitement to the rowing viewership, bring more to the rowing world. And, you know, it all starts with our Patreon family. So, but besides that, Lawrence, you know, it's been back. It's been great being back on the podcast. It has been amazing being back with Regatta Madness, chatting about the First World Cup of 2024. And Lawrence, you know, we have Europeans coming around the corner. So, you know, I can't wait to see the racing there.
Yeah. No, we're not messing around these days. We're going to have episodes coming out at years by the end of the next few weeks. So, yeah, keep around. Yeah, stay around. Keep an eye out for us. Tell your friends about us, and we'll catch you on the flip side. Cheers, Jakey.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.